minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, X minus 1. Fire.
Lights out, everybody.
The creaking door.
Dimension X.
Inner Sanctum Mystery.
Minus one.
Dark fantasy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Horror, brought to you by Duane Old Time Radio. Sci-Fi and Horror features some of the best programs from the golden age of radio, including X-1, Orbiter X, Dimension X, Slot X's, Lights Out, Ray Bradbury, Dark Fantasy, and many, many more. Before we start today's sci-fi and horror thriller, if you enjoy what I'm doing, let me ask you to subscribe to my channel. Subscribing is 100% free, and you will receive notifications on new posts. And now, on to the show. Now, this one, end of month is here. We're going to do Ray Bradbury as usual. But this one is a little bit different. And it's a little, when I first listened to it, it was a little confusing for me, but I finally got it after I did some more research. It is a UNICEF Halloween special. It's rather long. It's almost an hour and a half. It's three stories, but one encompassing story. He had a book called The October Country with a bunch of stories in The October Country. And here we're going to listen to three stories from that book. The first one is The Emissary. Then There Was an Old Woman. Then lastly, The Wonderful Death of Dudley Stone. But these are all done, as I said, as part of a UNICEF Halloween special. And this aired October 30th, 1984.
Okay, so are we all set now to do this thing? We're all set?
Yeah, I think you can go right ahead. Yeah.
Okay, Eric, it's 7 o'clock now, so the radio audience should just be joining us. So why don't you speak to them while I try and get this thing underway?
I'll set the scene, you get the actors.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, happy Halloween to everybody. My name is Eric Boardman. Welcome to Radio Drama at its finest. We are here at the Directors Guild in the heart of Hollywood, where a star-studded crowd has gathered. The cast is just about to come in now.
People, if you could all be quiet.
The
now,
tension is mounting. You could almost cut it with a tension-mounting device. It's a very, very exciting moment here. Some of our stars are coming in now. I see Lynn Redgrave and Casey Kasem, June Lockhart. Gary Owens is here. Frank Welker, Robert Ingham, Barry Ingham, excuse me, well, he was turned around, I couldn't see him. Robert Brown is here, and of course, Marvin Miller, our announcer. Did I miss it? Who? Oh, Gene Kasem. Oh, looking stunning tonight. It is a very exciting evening here. It's a happy Halloween. Ray Bradbury, the author of our play tonight, is here. I look around the room.
Five.
The next voice you'll hear will be Marvin Miller, our announcer.
Ray.
Live from the Directors Guild Theater in Hollywood, California. Welcome to Halloween 1984, a radio celebration starring Robert Brown, Danny Cooksey, Barry Ingham, Casey Kasem, Gene Kasem, June Lockhart, Gary Owens, Lynn Redgrave, Frank Welker, and I'm Marvin Miller. Tonight, through the artistry of Ray Bradbury and the magic of radio, travel with us to the grave and beyond. Halloween 1984, the October Country, will begin in just 2 minutes. Good evening. Marvin Miller again, live from Hollywood, California. Our old star cast has gathered here on stage before a live audience. And you listeners, to present Halloween 1984, adapted from our broadcast from Ray Bradbury's The October Country. The October Country. That country where it is always turning late in the year. That country where the hills are fog and the rivers are mist. Where noons go quickly. Dusks and twilights linger and midnights stay. That country composed in the main of cellars, sub-cellars, coal bins, closets, attics, and pantries faced away from the sun. That country whose people are autumn people, thinking only autumn thoughts, whose people passing at night on the empty walks sound like rain. Jack and Lydia Levine are on their way up the hill to the rustic, secluded home of their friends, Arthur and Elizabeth Wilding. Arthur is head of television production at a major studio. But now, without a hit show in the last 5 years, his position at the studio is about to be taken over by one of the hot younger executives. Jack Levine is a studio lawyer. He knows about the studio's plan, and he feels awkward, torn between his professional ethics and personal friendship.
Elizabeth.
I know. I've dreaded going tonight ever since I heard about it.
Are you going to say anything?
I don't think so. Let's not spoil their party. But you know, Arthur's going to rant about the series he wants to do next. Guaranteed biggie, he'll say. And of course, he won't know. It's a tough business, my dear.
Be careful of my makeup.
A geisha. What a clever costume, Lydia.
Elizabeth, you look like Glinda, the Good Witch of the North.
And Toto, too.
Hello, Jack.
Oh. Happy Halloween, Arthur.
Come on inside. I'm sure you know everybody. Okay. Sheldon, Faye, this is Jack and Lydia.
Hello.
Oh, yes. Nice. Boy, we're having a good time. And we have the classic horror film showing on the left over there. Fun and Games to the right. Straight ahead. The bar.
Campari and soda. Yeah, one for Lydia, too. Thank you.
Oh, no. Did you dig up that hideous movie again this year? What's it called?
I Married a Monster.
Hey, this is the good part.
The one I'm thinking of didn't have any good parts.
To the girl.
You know, that's every bit as awful as I remember it from last year.
Well, you go ahead. Go ahead now, laugh. What do you know about vintage cinematic horror?
Arthur, I know what I like.
Well, come on then. Let's all go into the library here. You gotta see this. Elizabeth is setting up my new Trivial Pursuit game for another round.
Hey. Come on in here, come on.
Yeah, over here.
Ah. What is this?
Well, you're familiar with the hottest game in town.
Sure, but not this. Is it the Silver Screen Edition, the Baby Boom Edition, the Genesis Edition, or is it?
Well, none of the above, actually. You're off to a bad start, Jack.
It's the Halloween edition.
The Halloween edition?
A wilding original.
Yeah, Arthur's always hated bobbing for apples. Hey, Lydia, join my team, will you? We'll beat them all.
All right.
Okay.
Five.
One. Oh, boy.
Come on, six.
Yeah. Who goes
that? Ooh. Oh, my God.
Listen to this, will you? If you throw a witch in the water, will she either sink or swim?
I know the answer to that one. It's a no-win situation. If she floats, she's a witch. If she sinks, she's innocent.
And dead of drowning. Go on, roll again.
Whoa.
Blue. Oh, that's a geography question. Would someone like to do the honors?
All right. Count Dracula makes his home in what Eastern European country?
Oh, home is wherever he hangs around.
Transylvania.
Uh-oh, he's on a hot streak now.
Three. One, two, three.
Ladies and gentlemen, the category is literature. Would someone read the question, please?
Here, give it to me.
All right, name the master of horror who plotted his own demise in 1955.
What category is this?
Peter Lorre.
Come on, no stalling. This is a literature question.
Yeah, well, the master of horror, Edgar Allan Poe, right?
No, it was... No, not 1855.
No, it was
H.P. Lovecraft.
No, it was... I'll tell you, it was 1955, not 1855.
Well, then it was Lovecraft.
Well, my dearest friends, for such an august assembly of awesome acumen, well, frankly, I'm very shocked. Have you totally forgotten the name... Dudley Stone, who...
Who are you talking about?
Dudley Stone. Dudley Stone, the master of horror. Surely you recall his short stories.
Not me, Arthur.
Oh, God, I remember those nights, covers pulled to my chin, gobbling up his tales of terror until dawn, too afraid to sleep before sunrise.
He
was quite a storyteller, specializing in the macabre.
Yeah, so what happened to him?
Well, he disappeared. No one knows for sure. They think it was suicide. They never found his body.
You know, maybe I do remember your Dudley Stone now.
Just a minute. Now, Amelia Earhart and Judge Crater may have found a fellow traveler in Dudley Stone. Maybe they're all missing somewhere together. Have you ever thought of that?
Whose turn is it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's get it on.
But just a minute here. Wait. It occurs to me that I have some of his stuff here for just such an occasion.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
All right. Now, why don't you put away that game and fix yourselves another drink right now?
Uh-oh. Sounds like we're in for a bedtime story.
I just love Halloween. It's my absolutely favorite time.
But what about the game? I'm ahead. Where are you going?
Here it is. I knew it had to be here. Look at this. My old copy of the collected works of Dudley Stone.
Oh, no.
All right. Now, listen to this. I say it's as good as anything Stephen King's done lately. It's called The Emissary.
The Emissary?
Yeah.
What's it about?
Well, if you ask him very nicely.
Oh, no. Do you have to?
Really. It's really about a very sick little boy and his dog. Now, listen. Martin knew it was autumn again, for dog ran into the house. You know, I'll never forget hearing those same words from Dudley himself. Really, only he could do them justice. Ran into...
the house, bringing wind and frost, and a smell of apples turned to cider under trees. The dust of goldenrod and the odor of burning leaves wound in his dark clockspring coat.
Dog, jump up on the bed. Good boy, good boy. What's outside, dog? Cold today, huh? Not anything like summer was. What'd you bring me? Come on. What you got in your coat, boy? What's this? Huh? A piece of fern, blackberry vine, hold still. It's marsh grass. You've been down by the cemetery, haven't you, boy?
Martin? Martin, what is that dog doing on your bed?
Nothing, Mom.
Well, he belongs on the floor. Now, that dog's all wet and filthy. It'll give you a chill.
He's all right, Mom. Really?
Now, Martin, you know what the doctor said.
Yeah.
Now, you must have your rest if you're going to get any better. Come on, down, boy. Come on. Will you tell that dog to get down? It's time for breakfast. Here, I got you some nice toast and cocoa.
Don't feel hungry.
It's hot. Mom.
Did you bring anything for dog?
Martin, that dog eats just fine. I'm more concerned about you.
Okay, Mom. I just don't feel like eating right now.
You know, dog is causing more trouble.
Oh, dog, you're bad.
Well, it's true. He dug another hole in Miss Tarkin's flower bed.
Well, maybe he's helping her look for something.
Look for something? That's the fourth hole he's dug for her in 4 weeks. She said, if he won't start behaving, she'll make us tie him up or keep him in the house.
No, you wouldn't do that, would you, Mom?
Might have to.
But if you did that, well, I won't know what's happening outside.
What are you talking about?
You know dog tells me everything.
Well, there's... Well, look, he's left dirty paw prints all over your covers. So I guess he's telling you that today's a bath day. Now, come on, eat your breakfast.
Lying there, Martin found autumn, as on the old days before sickness bleached him white on his bed. 10 dozen times a day, he was gifted with sunflower seeds, cinderpath, milkweed, horse chestnut, and full-framed smell of pumpkin. Through the loomings of the universe, dog shuttled, the design hid in his pelt. But he knew without asking where dog had rattled down hills, where autumn lay in cereal crispness, where children lay in funeral pyres, in rustling heaps, the leaf buried but watchful dead, as dog and the world blew by. Through stubble fields, over glitters of ravine creek, down marble spread of cemetery yard, into woods, in the great season of spices and rare incense, now Martin ran through his emissary, around, about, and home.
Martin, are you awake?
Yeah, Mom. Look.
Now, darling, you must put the light out and get your sleep.
But, Mom, look. I've written a message on a piece of tin. Can I put it on Dog's collar?
What's it say, dear?
My owner is Martin Smith. 8 years old, sick at home. Visitors welcome. I need some way to put it on Dog's collar.
Oh, of course, dear. Now, we'll do something about it tomorrow morning. The doctor says you must get your rest. Turning out the light now. Good night, dear. Just a moment.
Oh, I am so glad to see you. My goodness, dog. Oh, Martin, you won't believe it, but dog has brought you a visitor.
He has? Who is it? Mr. Holloway?
No, Martin, but I'm sure you'll be glad to see who it is.
Hello, Martin. Your dog told me he wanted company. Hello, it's Reed.
Miss Hake! My dog, Miss Hake! Well, thanks for bringing Miss Hake, dog.
Well, I'm always glad to visit you, Martin. I brought you a little something.
Thank you, Miss Hake. Orange cupcakes.
Yeah, I thought you'd like them. Oh, and your buddies at school send you their love and their best wishes for a speedy recovery. So how are you feeling today?
Oh, I'm fine. But I miss school. I don't want to fall behind.
Are you keeping up with your assignments?
Yes. Every day I try. Mom helps me.
Oh, then you won't fall behind. But I don't want you to worry about it. You're a bright student. Well, now, what should we do? Would you like a game of checkers?
I don't know. Could we maybe just talk?
Well, sure, Martin. What would you like to talk about?
Today?
All right. But I'm not sure what you mean by today.
Just what things are like outside today. It's October, and I haven't been able to go outside and play since June 15th. And if it weren't for my dog, I would never know what's happening outside.
Oh, poor Martin. Oh, it must be rough to be stuck inside when the rest of the world's going by outside. Well, no, it won't always be that way. I promise.
What about today?
Well, now, let's see. You can feel the frost in the air and the leaves. Well, you can see the leaves from your window.
I know about the leaves. Dogs bring them to me when they catch in his coat. And I can smell the pumpkins on him when he's been in the patch.
Then you know what dog is?
No. What?
Your emissary. You see, you can't go outside and play right now. But dog can. And when he comes barking back to you, he tells you what's going on outside.
Dog! Oh, dog! You're my emissary!
That's right. So now, hey, how about those checkers?
Can dog play?
What, two against one? That's not
dog.
Fair.
Checkers! Here, dog! Pay attention, dog. Miss Haight is good at checkers. I'll be red.
All right.
How is he?
Well, Doctor, he seems happier.
You're doing everything you possibly can, I'm sure. Martin's visitors are doing him good, and his spirit is much better, and that's important. His body is weak. The treatments aren't doing much good, I'm afraid.
Well, then stop these awful things. Oh, Doctor, that... there must be an answer. Why me? I don't know what to do for him.
His tests aren't telling as much, I'm afraid. But then, medicine still has much to learn. You are doing everything you possibly can. And all you can do is to make him comfortable. If we stop the treatments, he may never recover.
Oh, no.
Just make him feel loved every hour, every minute, every second you're with him. Longest life is just a microsecond in history, but what endures is the love.
Hello? Martin, are you awake?
Oh, hi, Miss Haight. Come in. I did my reading this morning about Gettysburg and President Lincoln. And after lunch, I did arithmetic.
Oh, that's good, Martin. Oh, we all miss you at school. Every day someone asks me when you're coming back.
I wish tomorrow.
Well, what else did you do today?
Well, dog went out this morning. He must have ran through Mr. McGinney's cornfield. Tassels in his coat. And he crossed over the creek in the ravine and ran through the cemetery again.
How do you know he was in the cemetery?
Because he came back with a purple petal from Mrs. Rose's hymn shawl. Put wife's on his grave. You know, Mom says she's been dead for 20 years. But every week, Mr. Hemshaw goes to the cemetery and puts roses there.
Well, I guess he loved her very much.
Yeah, and I love Dog. If he ever died, I'd put roses on his grave.
I'm sure you would.
Miss Haight, do you love somebody?
What? Well, yes, Martin, as a matter of fact, I do.
Who?
You, for one. And I do have a fiancé. And I love him, too, very much. Do you know, we're going to get married in December, and then I'll be a real missus.
Who is he?
Well, I think you know him. Joe Higgins.
That's okay. He coaches my baseball team.
There, you see. Oh, he's a lovely man. And I'm glad he asked me to marry him. Maybe, if you're able to, you can come to the wedding. It's going to be in the White Church up in the Hollow.
Dog and me used to walk through the woods there before.
Oh, Miss Haight, Joe Higgins is here for you.
Oh,
thank you.
I asked him to pick me up here. I have to go now, Martin. We've lots of shopping to do.
That's all right, Miss Haight. Could you bring Joe with you tomorrow?
Yes, of course I will. Maybe you two can talk about next season. Oh, and I'll bring some cupcakes. Orange ones.
All right.
Bye-bye, Martin.
Hi, hon. We got to get going. Stores will close in 2 hours.
Oh, God, it's freezing.
My body could catch his death tonight, couldn't he? Hey, how's Martin doing?
Well, he's a fighter.
Yeah, sure. Here, I'll get you the door.
Thank you.
Poor kid. Let me visit him next time, okay?
Yeah, all right. You know, I promised he'd see you tomorrow, and I plan to bake him some cupcakes.
Well, I definitely want to be in on that action, my dear.
Oh, Joe.
What do you say we hit Mason's first, honey?
Yeah, then Mr. Silverman's shop.
Fine.
You know, Joe, bridesmaids said they'd pay for their own dresses.
Hey, that's great.
Joe.
Huh?
Are you really going to have one of those icky bachelor parties?
Ah, Marianne, it's traditional. Honey, I still can't believe it. Just 2 months away. Hey, come here. Give me a kiss.
Oh, Joe. Here, Joe, be careful. Joe.
Black ice.
Joe!
England!
Martin, honey?
Has Miss Haight come? Miss Haight?
No, Martin. She's not coming. Honey, your teacher was in an accident. She and Joe were driving along Powder Ridge Road last night. And nobody knows what happened, but...
No cupcakes, Dog. Is she okay?
Martin... She died before they got her to the hospital. Joe Higgins is all right, though. They say it's a miracle he's still alive.
Mom, what do they do in the graveyard, near the ground? Do they just lay there?
Lie there.
Lie there. Is that all they do? Doesn't sound like much fun.
Oh, honey, all of those people, they're dead.
Why don't they jump up and run around for once in a while? God's pretty silly.
Martin.
Well, you'd think God would treat people better than asking them to lie underground forever. I tried to get Dog to play dead once. Pretty soon he started wagging his tail, and then he jumped onto my lap. Why can't those graveyard people do the same thing? Bet that's exactly what they do.
Oh, down. Be still with that awful talk.
Oh, Mom.
Autumn burnt the trees bare, and Dog ran still further around fording creek, prowling graveyards, as was his custom, and back in the dusk to fire off volleys of barking that shook windows with every turn. In the last days of October, Dog began to act as if the wind had changed. He stood quivering on the porch below. He whined, his eyes fixed on the empty land beyond town. He brought no visitors for Martin. Sometimes he'd shoot away, as if someone had called, but then would return later with no one following. Each night, Martin would sink deeper and deeper in his pillow.
Well, people are busy, Martin. They haven't time to notice the tag Dog carries. Oh, they mean to come visit, but they forget. We can't find him, Martin. No one's seen Dog since Friday. And the last one was Miss Tarkin down by the cemetery.
But that was 3 days ago. Somebody must have heard something.
Not a soul. All the kids are out trick-or-treating, and no one's seen him.
Dog is my emissary, and I love him. Without him, I won't know anything.
Well, honey, we'll keep looking. He's a smart dog. He'll find his way home. Don't you worry. Martin, please?
Mom, do you think he's dead?
No, I hope not, but you never know. The way some people drive around these roads, all we can do is just hope for the best. I'm sorry, Martin.
But I miss him.
I know, dear.
It's been a week since that dog ran off, Nancy. Staying home another night won't find him any quicker, if he's to be found. Besides, you deserve such a good movie and a good time tonight. Go on. Martin and I will be just fine.
Oh, well, all right. We won't be late, Alma.
No need to hurry. We'll be just fine. Martin?
Yes, Miss Tarkin?
I'll be out back. If you need me, just holler.
Okay.
Coming from dog was different. It was the smell of strange earth. It was the smell of night within night, of things that were long hidden and decayed. What kind of message was this from dog? What could such a message mean? The stench, the ripe and awful cemetery earth. Dog was a bad dog, digging where he shouldn't. Dog was a good dog, always making friends. Dog loved people. Dog brought them home. And now, moving up the dark hall stairs at intervals, came the sound of feet. One foot dragged after the other, painfully, slowly, slowly, slowly. Dog shivered. A rain of strange earth fell seething on the bed. Dog turned. Martin had company. Martin had company.
Most nights, those mysterious, unaccounted-for sounds you hear around the house are just a shifting here or a settling there, or perhaps just the pressure of the wind. And the wind itself on most nights is just the wind. But on other nights, especially on this Halloween night, the wind is never just the wind. You all stay right there, and we'll be back in just a moment. Halloween. 1984. The October Country continues. I'm Marvin Miller. Arthur Wilding had just finished reading to his guests from the collected works of Dudley Stone. Arthur is obviously taken by rereading one of his favorite authors. And, well, let's go back in and join them.
Wonderful.
Oh, the man's style.
His economy of words. What elegance. Yes. What a writer.
Oh, Arthur, the bristles on my broom are standing on end.
You know, really, it's odd. In his day, he was far from a nobody. It would be like Salinger or Bradbury just vanishing into thin air today.
Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah,
maybe there was foul play.
Maybe the master of horror scared himself to death.
Right, I don't know. Yeah.
Come on now, honey. We better be going. You got a big day tomorrow.
Yeah. That MGM deal. But, Arthur, I want to see that satellite TV gizmo of yours before we go, okay?
Well, sure. Come on. It's in front. There we go. You can't imagine how many channels I can get now. Such resolution. There she is. 3-meter dish. LNA.
Arthur, I just want you to know our friendship means a lot to me.
Well, what is it, Jack?
Well, Arthur, the studio's giving your job to Barry Melnickler. You're out.
I see. Youth movement, huh? Those fools.
Arthur, you didn't hear it from me, okay?
I've got a project that'll turn this town upside down.
Arthur, I'm really sorry about
this. A monster idea. It'll make more money than those idiots ever dreamed of.
I know, well,
you
sure?
But
Lydia and I have got to get going. It's late, Arthur.
I suppose Belton is behind this, that worm.
Arthur, come on. Something will come up, you know that, in time.
I don't believe it.
Well, Elizabeth, I guess we'll see you Saturday at Mary's.
Well, this was fun.
Thanks, old man.
All right, okay, Jack. Don't let the goblins get you.
Good.
Good night.
Good night, Arthur.
Good night, everybody. Elizabeth? Well, thank you for coming.
Good night. Good night.
Thanks again, everybody.
Good night, all.
See you soon.
Oh. I'm beat, Arthur. Let's go to bed.
No, I've got Dudley Stone on my mind.
Oh, well, in that case, you make sure you don't disappear yourself. I'll see you later, okay?
Okay. Those conglomerated idiots. Those craven scum. 20 years and now nothing. Just like that. My God, so much for loyalty. Now what do I do? What do I do? Dudley Stone. That's it. Dudley Stone, the master of horror. Do him like, where's that book? Do him like a Hitchcock. The master of horror and a little cognac. Yes, that Napoleon lifts the spirits. Dudley Stone. Made for TV. I can do an anthology. The Twilight Zone of the 80s. Great. But who's got the rights? Who's got the rights? This stuff is going to make me rich. The last laugh. I'll go independent. Those studio jerks. Let's see. What other stories are there? There must be 20 in this collection alone. There was an old woman by Dudley Stone.
Two, Pearl, two. What in the world? Land sakes, how dare you, young man, without so much as a rap on the door to nothing. Who do you think you are? Get that box out of here. And then you could just skip, too. I got tatting and knitting to do, and no never mind about tall, dark gentlemen with fangled ideas, either. Oh, now you made me lose count. How am I supposed to make myself a comforter with the likes of you gawking at me? It'll be getting mighty chilly soon, and it ain't fitting for a lady with rice paper bones to be sitting in this drafty house without warming herself.
Yeah.
Well, that's an antique chair. Now, you be gentle. And stop staring at me with those funny lights in your eyes. Lordy, it gives me the collie wobbles.
Tildy, it's time.
Well, by the look of that box, you ain't come from a laundry. I don't like this. I don't like you, and I don't like your wooden box. Now, you can just take your hoodlum friends outside with you.
Things aren't always what they seem, Tildy.
You're up to no good, Bright Eyes. You can forget it. Scoot! Shoo! All right, then you can just sit there till Hades freezes. My Emily's coming. My niece. She's coming this afternoon, and she'll shoo you out of here so fast you won't know what hit you.
Tildy, how about resting?
I will not. Especially with a scoundrel like you. I'm calling the police.
Tildy, give me your hand.
Don't you Tildy me, young man. Now, you mind your manners. I'm a lady, right and proper, and I got no time to lollygag with the likes of you. I got 100 comforters, 200 sweaters, and 600 potholders left in these old fingers. Come back when I'm done. Maybe I'll have time for you then.
Tildy,
it's time. Where's Emily, my dear sweet niece Emily? Hair like yellow corn tassels, soft and fine. Oh, she'll take care of you. Her mother died, you know, some 20 years ago. I left that poor, sweet child to me. I never heard of people dying for any good cause. Young man, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Skedaddle.
I'm sorry, Tildy.
Tildy, you're such a beauty. You look like your mama when she was your age. Why won't you settle down?
Papa, is that you? Papa. Oh, Papa, I like laughing and playing and singing. I'm not the marrying kind. I got no time to settle down and grow old and wait for him to plant me in some parson's field.
Tildy. We all grow old someday.
But death is ridiculous, Papa. It'd run off with Mama when we needed her most, remember? Now, you call that sensible?
Tildy, what can we do? Death comes, eventually.
Fight! Strike it below the belt. Don't believe in death. Ignore it. Rage!
Can't be done, Tildy.
There's got to be a change. Why, it's just silly that people live a couple of years and get shoved like wet seeds into a hole. Nothing sprouts. You lay there a million years helping no one. Papa, you listening to me? Papa! Please don't go, Papa. Stay with me. I know I'll beat it. Oh, it's so cold. Why did Papa go? Rat, where's my sweet Emily? Emily? Death's done her wrong. Her mother went and died. And oh, I do love that child. Raised her like my own. Oh. Young man, are you still here?
Yes, Tildy. I'm here. I'm with you. I've traveled with you for a long time. I've watched you chase off the men. Turn away from the world. You need not resist death. It's natural. Natural as being born. You can't run away from it.
Young man, if you think you could talk me into that silly old box, you're off your trestle. Lay your hands on me and I'll give you what for.
Tildy, enjoy it.
Well, I'm sure that clock chimed four times just 5 minutes ago. Don't you have any other appointments, young man?
Yes.
Well, then you won't mind if I show you the door. I'm feeling a touch of the chills, and I want to rest up before Emily gets here. Just rest up for Emily. There it goes again. I'm going to get that fixed when Emily gets here. Well, you give up. You'll never convince me. I'm mule stubborn. And don't bother coming back, neither.
I shan't be back.
I always told Papa I'd win. Oh, I'll knit for the next 100 years. Take that old box with you, too. Scoot! Goodbye and good riddance. Darn fool man with his maggoty-brained ideas. Oh, look. Here comes Emily. Well, it's about time. Lord, she looks pale. Wonder what's worrying her. Poor girl. Well, I think I'll make a pot of tea and fix some toast. Emily, Emily, I've been waiting for you. Emily? Emily, what are you staring at, child?
No.
What's wrong, Emily?
No.
Stop screaming, Emily, stop screaming. Get up off the floor. I won't hurt you. Emily, what's wrong with you?
Oh, my child, child, child. And Dildy. I'm so sorry I wasn't here with you. You said you'd never die.
What are you talking about, child? I'm here. Take my hand. Sweetheart, I'm here.
You're dead.
Land of Goshen, Emily, take my hand.
Such nonsense.
Oh, my God. How can this be?
That sneak thief, that dog, dog fiend, he stole it. He toted it away.
Why, never.
Child, get up and fetch my bonnet.
Are you a ghost?
Certainly not. Seems a young man came calling today and he stole my body. Well, he may have my flesh and blood, but I still have my soul. Come on.
I can't hear you walking. Well, what are you going to do?
No, I'm going to get my body back. The nerve of that young man. Hurry up, child, hurry. We better find my body before they squirt juices in my veins and dice and cube it the way them persnickety morticians do. They cut you so, and it won't be no good to no one.
And I'm driving around the ghost of my dear Aunt Tildy.
Oh, that's enough of that talk. Now, quick, girl. Here, there's the mortuary over there. Just pull over. There's the box. By the hearse. And there are the men. My body's in that box. Come on.
Aunt Tildy, wait.
Hey, you. That's my body in there.
I wouldn't know about that, ma'am. Please, step aside. This thing is heavy.
Sir, I'll have you know that I weigh about as much as a goose down pillow.
Lady, I could care less. Just get out of the way, please.
Don't. And you be careful. You're kicking it. I want the person in charge. Hello?
Madam, please. You're not allowed back here. This is a private area. Permit me to escort you back to the Chapel of Heavenly Repose.
Thank you, sir. But I've come to retrieve my body. Your young man removed it in that wooden box.
What young man?
The one who came snooping around my house today. That's who.
Madam, there must be some mistake.
No matter. No mistake. This is no place for my body, and I don't want me here. I want me home cooking, fixing a ham for Sunday dinner, and I've got sweaters to knit, friends to feed, and clocks to fix.
Yes, I know you're upset at a time like this, but you must understand. We have work to do. A body has arrived. It must be prepared.
You put so much as a fingerprint on that body, and I'll just have you for the...
Please, madam. George. George. Please escort this woman to the chapel.
I'm not leaving this room until I get my body back. Now, that's my body. Can anybody see? Look, it's my body, and I'll stay if I want to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your twin sister. Identical. No wonder you're all upset. Please, it would be much better if you returned to the chapel, madam.
Listen here, you stupid ghoul. That's not my sister. That's me. It's me.
No. Things like this just don't happen. George, she's hysterical. I can't work under these circumstances, George.
Come on, lady, let's go. It's too late anyway.
Get your hands off me, you brute.
I hear.
Earn my body, thank you. I am a maiden lady, sir. My moles, my birthmarks, scars, and all other bric-a-brac are mine, and you, including the turn of my ankle, they're all a secret. I don't want him prying and probing and cutting and hurting it in any way. And this one's got me on his table, like a pigeon ready to be drawn and stuffed.
Please, madam, calm yourself. I'll see that we attend to your loved one with the utmost care.
No, you don't understand. You're about to commit malpractice.
This is highly irregular. Malpractice? Mr. O'Donnell, madam, please excuse me.
Okay,
all right, madam. You can have your body back. Take it and go.
Intact?
As is.
No formaldehyde?
No formaldehyde.
Blood in it?
Blood, my God, yes, blood. If only you'll just take it and go.
It's a deal! I'll see if I still fit into the old girl.
What's she doing? She's going. Oh, this is impossible. Oh, I don't believe
it. Cold as the grave.
Completely out of it.
Come alive, damn you. Raise up a bit.
Easy.
Hold your legs, old woman. See. Feel. Move. Oh. Here.
Now, any afternoon about 4, if you want to visit Aunt Tilda, you just walk around to her antique shop and rap. There's a big black funeral wreath on the door. Don't mind that. Aunt Tilda left it there. That's how her humor runs. You rap on the door, and her voice shrills out at you.
Is that the man in black?
And you laugh and say, no, it's only me, Aunt Tilda. And she whips you in quick and slams the door so no man in black can ever slip in with you. She's sure to make you comfortable with a cup of coffee, Anne.
If you're especially good, I'll give you a little treat. Are you watching now? Look closely. There.
And with modest moves of her fingers, she will unfasten the white lace at her neck and chest, and for a brief moment, let you see what lies beneath. The long blue scar where the autopsy was neatly sewn together. And of course, always followed with the remark.
Not bad sewing for a man. Not bad at all.
Well, they certainly don't need an announcer here. You all might want to take a moment to poke the fire or puff up the sofa pillows, and we will be back. You are listening to the Halloween 1984 live radio broadcast from Hollywood, California. Tonight's performers are Robert Brown, Danny Cooksey, Barry Ingham, Casey Kasem, Gene Kasem, June Lockhart, Gary Owens, Glenn Redgrave, Frank Welker, and I'm Marvin Miller. Our story tonight is based on the book The October Country by Ray Bradbury. And this broadcast will benefit the U.S. Committee for UNICEF and the United Nations Children's Fund. Now, let's go back to the Wilding House.
Coffee, darling?
Not now. I'm busy on the phone here. All right, Manhattan. Number 4, Arkham House Publishers. A-R-K... what? Just a minute. Okay. Arkham? Good morning. I'd like to talk to someone there about one of your writers, Dudley Stone. Come on. Hello? Yes, my name is Arthur Wilding. I'm calling from Hollywood. I'm an independent film producer. Yeah, I'd like to know about Dudley Stone's work. Who owns the TV rights? Well, can you check? I know, yes. Dead since 1955. Well, where do you send the royalties? Jamaica? She's still alive? West Indies? What's her address? Do you have a phone number? All right. Thank you.
Well,
they handle publishing rights only. His widow gets the money, and she lives outside Ocho Rios. There's no phone. It's the same place they lived when he was alive.
So?
So if I'm going to acquire film adaptation rights, then I'm going to have to ask her. Okay, let me try another call and see. Hello? Arthur Wilding calling? Yeah, I need a flight to Montego Bay. This afternoon.
Arthur?
Two seats. We'll take them, yes. Wilding? Mr. and Mrs. At the airport? All right. Yeah, okay, thanks. Thanks very much for your help. Put it on my account. Get packed.
Honey!
Elizabeth, I'm onto something very, very big. Last night, reading Dudley Stone, it hit me. No one's ever done Dudley Stone on TV. Elizabeth, imagine a series based on Dudley Stone. His stories, maybe you could mix them with his mysterious demise. Oh, baby, this is wonderful. Come, my Caribbean queen, we're off to Jamaica.
What if she turns you down?
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of strange. We may be on some wild goose chase shopping for rights from Stone's widow, but there may be an even bigger story, like what kind of craziness drove him to kill himself. But I don't think she'll turn us down. You know, ever since I picked up this book, it's like I know what's going to happen next. I'm following a script with a happy ending. A winner. It's intuition.
Okay, so tell me why the stewardess is looking so upset.
Sir, please put up your tray, and your seat should be in an upright position also. Don't clean your face with our pillow.
No.
And do put out your cigarette. Your briefcase goes under the seat. And fasten your
seat belt. Yes, yes.
Folks, we're beginning our descent into Montego Bay. Should be at ground zero in 20 minutes. That's 22-25 local. Weather is clear. Temperature at sea level, 77 degrees. That's warm. Winds from 300 at 10, dew point 52, pressure 26.5. 26.5!
Taxi! Taxi! Taxi!
We're getting absolutely soaked.
Well, hang on, dear. We'll find something. Here we go. Just a second.
Here. You going somewhere, man?
Aren't you booked already?
Oh, no, man. He's me mate. Well, get him.
Hello. You're Americans, huh?
Oh, Jamaica weather. Well, where you want to go?
Well, we want to go to Ocho Rios. It's a place called the Stone Estate. Really, it's beyond Ocho Rios, outside a little town called Punta Diabla.
Oh, no. Well, not many people go to Punta Diabla.
No.
I know, Mobe. This is a bad night for driving. Bad spirits. You stay at Great House near town tonight. No problem.
Arthur, let's wait. Tomorrow morning it'll be light out. It's late now.
I know what I'm doing.
Arthur, I don't think this is even a taxi.
But, hey, what business you got in Punta Diablo, man?
Well, that's no business of yours.
Hey, man, don't you go sneaky on me.
I beg your pardon.
Okay, my cab, my business, man. No tourists go to Punta Diablo. Out.
Oh, you better tell them, Arthur.
Look, I don't want to get out. I'm looking for a woman named Stone. She lives in Punta Diablo. Her husband was the writer Dudley Stone. I want to see her about doing a TV show.
If she don't want to be found?
We go to Punto Diablo for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing good come from beyond Ocho Dios.
Now, come on. Now, don't talk foolishly. You're scaring my wife.
Darling.
I don't make up nothing, lady. You're going to an evil place on El Dia de Muerte.
El Dia de Muerte.
The Day of the Dead. Well, it sounds quaint.
Arthur, don't be so rude.
Well, it's superstitious rubbish. Yeah. But it is a celebration to honor ancestors turns into some Jamaican voodoo. Let him go on. It's terrific atmosphere. And maybe I could use it in a story. It's a good thing I brought my cassette recorder.
Oh, Arthur, I'm tired. I'm sticky. We've been traveling all day. Arthur, can't we stop somewhere for the night?
And that is not all there is to it, man. In this place, the dead don't sleep easy. I've seen it myself. They rise from the grave, man.
Mm-hmm. What? What?
On El Dia de Muerte.
Yeah. The gravestones are covered with ribbons and colored tissue.
Oh.
The gravestone burns with many candlelights.
Uh-huh.
They cover all the graves with flowers, yellow.
The color of the demon's eyes.
Red. Like a blood moth.
They gather at the cemetery with bread and wine, and they sell little sugar skulls.
Sounds like a good old-fashioned wait for the tourists. Oh. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may be ancestors ourselves.
No, man. They don't eat the food or drink the wine. It's for the dead.
If the dead go,
without their reward,
you join the dead.
Oh, superstitious nonsense.
Oh, this is great stuff.
No, man. It's true.
I have seen the mummies, man.
Uh-huh.
Down below, there's a room that is filled with bones. Like fire.
Look out there. You want us to join the ancestors before we reach Punta Diablo?
It's the demons. The dead. The dead are with us tonight.
Oh, Punta Diablo sounds like the ideal vacation spot. When in Jamaica, take in the colorful Dia de Muerte festival. Maybe we'll have a chance to meet the remains of your Mr. Stone.
Tell me, did you see the marker for a man named Dudley Stone?
I don't go back there.
No need. Just tell us anything that might help us find his widow.
Good Lord, this is like driving on Mulholland.
Oh. Hey, time to turn back.
Yes, turn them back now.
Oh, you must believe me. Tonight, the ghosts walk and the demons rule. I seen them.
What have you seen?
The mummies.
Go on.
In the graveyard at Punta Diablo. A hellhole lining along each wall are the mummies. I counted all of them.
That's right, man. 115.
No.
The catacombs.
And along each wall, they wait. They wait in a long line.
Some wait forever, man.
Wait for what?
Wait for space in the grave.
Space?
In Punta Diablo, there's only one cemetery. Some families can't afford the money.
We are poor Jamaicans.
Ah, and until the money is paid, the dead must stand and wait their turn in the catacombs. And when a family can pay, the dead one is buried properly.
Oh, my God.
Don't listen, sweetheart. They can't be serious. Either that or it's another Dudley Stone story.
Oh, to think. Some, the skin is like parchment stretched as if to dry from bone to bone.
Dried, shrunken.
The screaming, silent screams.
Rigor mortis pulls the jaw open.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Wilder.
Yes. You know, there might be something to this, or they're sounding more like Dudley Stone all the time.
Uh-oh. Their bony hands clawing at their bosoms, screaming. Their jaws wide, tongues out. You can tell they know they're dead. And there is one woman who is different from the others.
That's right, man. The one who is the most horrible one of them all.
This woman, they thought she was dead, but she was only unconscious.
Sleeping like dead.
And they buried her quick so the heat wouldn't rot her. But after a year, her sisters paid no more rent, so they dug her up and they found her hands were clawing her coffin lid.
She must have woke up in the box, man. Oh, tried to scratch the lid off her coffin. Oh, she tried to pry the nails from her casket. She suffocated in her own grave.
Arthur, I think they're serious.
I tell you, man, I won't go back there. I steer clear of Punta Diabla.
We turn back now.
No. Keep going. I'll pay you well.
No!
Shut up to God. You'll never see them with the jaws hanging down, huh? With the tongues hanging out like jeering children.
Hair.
Their hair insane tangles like nests made by monsters. There's a man with his stomach open like a tree hollow, half of a uniform shredded, hanging from his shoulder.
I saw it, man.
And brains shriveled inside broken skulls.
That's enough.
What now?
This is as far as we go.
Oh, yes.
Arthur, I don't like that.
Well, at least have the common decency to point us in the right direction.
Out!
Now what?
Stay on the road until the road becomes sand.
And then?
Arthur, please.
Remember, stay on the road.
Oh. What about your money? Here's your fare. Here's your fare.
I don't know about any of you listeners, but I certainly wouldn't be standing where the Wildings are right now. Not after the warning our cab drivers tried to pass on. Oop, that was a bad choice of words. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Marvin Miller, and we are live at the Directors Guild Theater in Hollywood, California, with our presentation tonight of Halloween 1984's The October Country. I beg your indulgence now while I run down our present situation. Arthur Wilding has dragged his wife Elizabeth along on his search for the widow of Dudley Stone, a mystery writer who disappeared as mysteriously as his own stories. The search has taken them to Punta Diablo on the island of Jamaica, where our friends are now stranded in the dark beside a dirt road.
Well, we found the beach. And the road's turning to sand.
So?
Well, this must be Punta Diabla, if that crazy cab driver's right. Stone's widow must live around here somewhere.
No, you've lost your mind. It's the middle of the night. We're running around a jungle somewhere in the Caribbean looking for someone who might not exist and trying to avoid a graveyard. It's dark, and I'm tired. I'm wet, and I'm hungry. Is this adventure still going according to your script? Because if it is, I'd like to go fast forward to the hotel room. I want to go home.
Well, at least it stopped raining. And the clouds are letting a little moonlight through. Here we go.
Oh, look. Look. Somebody's standing on the beach.
Where?
There. Look. Quite still. Like a tall tree. Oh, honey, let's go back.
No way. Just a minute. I'll ask him for help.
Yeah, Arthur, do be careful. Remember what the cab driver said?
Oh, it's probably just a fisherman.
Oh, Mummy's place of black arts. Oh, my God. Please be a fisherman, please.
He's moving towards us now.
Hey, hold on there.
Sorry to bother you. We're looking for Punta Diabla.
Looking for me, I'll bet. And you found me. I'm Marley's ghost.
Hello. Stone's the name. Dudley Stone.
What?
Dudley Stone? Alive?
In the pink. Ah, now, relax, my good man. I'm glad I found you two after they let you off. Our friends in the car told me I'd find you here, if I wanted to.
Well, you mean...
Those were your friends?
Well, locals do look out for each other, you know. Awful weather, isn't it? I suppose you're here to ask the big question, aren't you? Oh, dear, we'd better get you two into the house. You're looking a little green under the gills.
Yes.
Now, Lena has supper on the way and plenty of beer to revive your flagging spirits.
No, well, thank you.
Yes. Lena, my darling. Look, we've got visitors.
Hi, Arthur Wilding, and this is my wife, Elizabeth.
How do you do?
Oh, come inside. Come inside. Sit down. You must be exhausted.
Thanks.
But why have you sought us out at this hour?
Well, I guess I really got a bit carried away. I got caught up in the mystery of the Master of Horror. Actually, it began with Trivial Pursuit, really, and I guess the pursuit ran away with me. You see, I'm a film producer and television.
Here's a little local brew to set you straight.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I lost 10 years off my life when you stopped us on the beach.
Oh, well, come on. Eat, both of you. I'm afraid all I have is some reheated chowder and bread.
No, you're very kind.
I've got 100 questions.
Ah, go on, eat. Well, I've kept you waiting long enough. You want the truth, don't you? Yeah, of course. I was murdered by a man with a gun 25 years ago, almost to this very day.
Murdered? Well, you look very much alive, sir. Elizabeth, maybe the cab driver drugged us, and this is all a big hallucination of some kind. Maybe we're dead, too.
Oh, my God.
Lena, our guests look stricken. I think they require another red stripe. Now, dear friends, I don't want you to faint before you've heard about my murder or murderer. You may know of him. John Otis Kendall.
John Otis Kendall, yes. Yes, it so happens we have. A few books in the 40s, burned out by the 60s, a minor writer, died very recently, didn't he?
Yes, God rest him. John Otis Kendall, a writer of great potential.
But not nearly as great as yours.
Well, now, you just wait. You see, we were boys together. We swam in the same ponds, went to the same school. He was always a better student. Later, we did fare, both of us, and I did better. And still better as time ran by. His first book got one good notice. Mine got six. If I got one bad notice, he got a dozen. And all this led up to my murder. For it was John Otis Kendall who, in 1955, traded a few old clothes and some remaindered copies of his books for a gun. And came to my house in Maine to kill me.
He really meant to kill you?
Meant to hell, he did. With a bang. There he sat. John Otis in that very same chair where you sit now. Behind him, Penobscot Bay in full lace. Overhead a moon like a dish of cool cream. And across the table, Lena laughing at everything I said or chose not to say. Both of us 30. Life, our magnificent carousel. And John Otis seated there, quietly taking the little blue gun from his pocket.
I thought it was a cigar lighter of some sort.
Yeah, but John Otis said quite seriously, I'm going to kill you, Mr. Stone.
Well, what did you do?
Do? I sat there, stunned. I heard a terrible slam. The coffin lid in my face. I heard coal down a black chute, dirt on my buried door. They say your past hurtles by at such times. Nonsense. The future does. You see your face, a bloody porridge. I remember the moment just like it was an hour ago. But why, John? What have I done?
Done?
Now, John, what do you want?
One thing more than anything in the world. To kill you and become famous. Get my name in the headlines. Be famous as you are. Famous. be known for a lifetime and beyond as the man who killed Dudley Stone.
You can't mean that.
Oh, I do. I do. I'll be far more famous than I am today in your shadow. Well, listen, no one in the world knows how to hate like a writer hates. God, I love your work. And God, how I hate you because you write so well. I'll cut you off before you reach your prime.
John, do you hate me that much? Because I've been lucky and you not.
Yes, damn it!
All right, John, all right. If you want me dead, I'll be dead. Would you like me for me to never write again?
I'd like nothing better. Get ready to die.
All right, then, John. I'll never write again.
What?
John, we're old friends. We've never lied to each other, have we? Take my word. From this night on, I'll never put pen to paper.
Why should I believe that?
There are the only original copies of the two books I've been working on for the past 3 years. I'll burn the one in front of you now. The other, you yourself can throw into the sea. Here.
No, no!
From this day forward, I will not write ever again.
How can you do this?
To make everyone happy. To make you happy because we've been friends. And we'll be friends again eventually. To make Lena happy because I'll be her husband again and not an agent's trained seal. And myself happy because, oh, I'd rather be a live man than a dead author. John Otis left with my final novel. And that night, I walked by the shore, taking deep breaths and feeling my arms and legs like a child walking and wading in the surf, crying like a child.
You honored your promise?
Well, what would you have done in a similar position? Well, look at it this way. John Otis did me a favor. He didn't kill me. Do you really understand how grateful I was that he had let me live when he had it in his hand to annihilate me forever?
But surely without your work, life was over.
Oh, no. It was all roaring to a boil in me. John Otis simply spooned the froth off the top so I could see the brew. It was very clear. Fidgeting with words on paper, experiencing vast depressions of heart and soul, watching the greedy critics graft me up, chart me down, slice me up like a sausage, eat me at midnight breakfast. Work of the worst sort. I was ready to fling the pack. My trigger was set.
Really, how was that?
He helped me to get out when the going was good. You see, down deep, I knew the two books John Otis destroyed. Wow, they were very bad. I knew what none of my critics knew, that I was headed nowhere but down.
Yes.
Those books would have killed me deader than Kendall possibly could. It was a lovely funeral. I looked, as they say, natural. His next book, critics cried, would have been it, a masterpiece. And now I wanted to live. I changed my name and ran for mayor. I won. Sheriff, town librarian, sewage disposal official. Oh, I shook a lot of hands. I saw a lot of life. Did a lot of things. We've lived every way there is to live. With our eyes, our noses, our mouths, with our ears and our hands. We've been 3 times around the world. I even delivered our baby son, who's grown and married now by himself. We've done and done again. And now, you know. The delightful death of Dudley Stone. To death.
Oh, hi, Metro Republic. You're calling bright and early. Yeah, just a minute. Arthur, where are you? Arthur?
God, have you been here all night? An empty bottle of brandy and Dudley Stone, Arthur. Wake up. Godfather, your boss on the phone.
What's that?
Well, good morning, Sleeping Beauty. Missed you last night. Have you been here the whole time?
Oh, Elizabeth. What time is it?
It's a little after 8. Here, come on. Let me plug the phone in right next to you. The boss of bosses wants you. Probably the latest ratings complaint.
All right. Give me that.
Arthur, what's got into you?
Honey, sit down. How would you like a trip someplace? I mean a long, long one for both of us. I think the time has come for a change. I was thinking we might start down in the Caribbean or, say, Jamaica or somewhere, and then maybe we'll look around back east. Who knows? It may be the time has come to get out of this place permanently.
We'll be back with the close of our program in just a moment. Musical director is Ray Calcord. Sound effects performed by Tom Buchanan and Bob Mott. Our program this evening starred Robert Brown as Dudley Stone, Danny Cooksey as Martin, Barry Ingham as the doctor and gentleman visitor, Casey Kasem as Jack Levine and Jamaican cab driver, Jean Kasem as Emily, June Lockhart as Aunt Tildy, Gary Owens as Arthur Wilding, Lynn Redgrave as Elizabeth Wilding, with Frank Welker as the dog. And I'm Marvin Miller. Based on Ray Bradbury's book, The October Country, it was adapted for radio by Rick Liebert, Deborah Hansen, Jack Nerad, Sharon Benoit, and John Clark, who was also our director. The October Country was produced by Jeff Sudikoff, Johnny Biggs, and Matt Tombers, in coordination with the United States Committee for UNICEF.
Back several things. First of all, my interest in Halloween as a child in Waukegan, Illinois, it was my favorite holiday. So when I got out with the kids wandering around the town, those memories stayed with me for a long time. And then later when I was 19 years old, radio really came into my life. I heard the early broadcasts of Norman Corwin and always wanted to grow up and be part of the radio experience. So a night like tonight is very important to me because of these influences and the part that a man like Norman Corwin played in my life.
Let's go back to Halloween during that period. Tonight people are staying home being chilled by listening to your stories. How did you spend Halloween night as a kid?
The same way everyone else did. In fact, it's still true. Up until this year, tonight, I would have been out tricking and treating. And when people want me to lecture on Halloween, I say, no, that's ridiculous. I want to be with my children. And a couple of years ago, when my daughters were grown, they kicked the habit for 1 year. And they came back the next year and said, Daddy, we want to do it again because we miss it. So I went out with them again.
You are one of the great storytellers of the world. What are the storytellers that influenced you?
Oh, Edgar Allan Poe, of course. And when I was a child, my Aunt Neva gave me my first book of Edgar Allan Poe stories. And then later in my life, H.G. Wells and Jules Verne. And on all the way up to George Bernard Shaw.
Now, many authors use characters from their real life. Any characters you recall tonight that were pulled from your life?
Oh, that boy in bed is me, of course. And the dog is my dog. But thank God, no one came from the graveyard to visit me. And I was in Mexico, and the experiences I had there with the mummies of Guanajuato caused another part of the story. And then being a writer and seeing the sort of life other writers live influenced the third story.
Aunt Tildy was a colorful character. Is she one of yours?
No, she's a totally made-up character. I like to go to the typewriter and word associate and see what happens. So sometimes you take a character like that and begin to write, and then all of a sudden there's the end of the story.
But there have to be moments as you face that white paper when nothing's going on.
Never has happened like that. I started to write when I was 12, and I've written every day of my life since, and no dry spells, because I keep shifting gears all the time. I like to write fantasy. I like to write weird tales. I like to go off to Mars. And if a story doesn't work out, I drop it and do something else.
Well, you certainly have given us chills and thrills for many, many years, and I want to thank you for the chills and thrills tonight and for the thrills to come.
I want to thank everyone here for this lovely production. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray Bradbury. Sure. And I want to thank our invited audience tonight, and of course, all of you listening at home. The entire production tonight was directed by John Clark. I'm Eric Boardman. Good night.
You're listening to News Talk Radio 81, KGO, San Francisco.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy what I'm doing, I ask you to please subscribe to my channel or channels. Well, hope you enjoyed, and until next time, stay safe, wish you well, peace.